Morning, everyone. My name is Gay Garner, and I'm an alcoholic.
Amen.
Grateful to be sober and to be here at this service workshop and to see so many of you here. It's been a wonderful turnout. It's a real privilege for me to have the opportunity to introduce David. I don't know, David's just kind of one of those people that I've always known. I don't remember when I met him. I don't know when I heard about him. I've just always known David was around. Concept 9 says that no society can function well without able leadership in all its levels, and AA can be no exception. And David has certainly been one of our able leaders, and I am just delighted. He is a past delegate. He is a past U.S. trustee at large. I have had the opportunity to hear him do several workshops on service, on the steps, on the traditions, and now we're going to have an opportunity, and I think this is the first time in the state of Georgia that we have had a workshop on the principles of service on our 12 concepts. I had an opportunity to hear David share last night. He was up and shared at a meeting, and we made the decision not to open this meeting formally as we generally do. David cited, as you will notice, sometimes David just shuts his eyes and goes. He's like a computer. And he quoted from a letter that is on the wall in our archives at GSO, which he said that he wished everyone in service had the opportunity to have. So we're going to let him come up there and do that again, so we'll all have the opportunity to hear about that letter on the walls of the archives. David Aronofsky from Dallas, Texas.
Thank you, Jay. Hi, everybody. My name's David A., and I'm an alcoholic. And she's already given my last name, so I don't have to worry about that. And only because of God's grace, through the miracle of Alcoholics Anonymous, am I sober this day, and for this I am so thankful. And it is certainly a privilege, believe it or not, for someone to be asked to do the 12 concepts of world service. Because if many of you who, the first time if you've ever read the 12 concepts of world service, it's just like reading the yellow pages in the phone book, you know. They're there. And some of it is a little bit strange and a little foreign to the average member of Alcoholics Anonymous and also those who are new in service. And believe it or not, it's still foreign to some who have had extensive experience in service, because it requires something that it's discipline. And if there's anything that our kind we do not like is discipline. But in order to, and this is my own experience, and in AA we're asked to share our experiences and not our opinions. Because we find as a result of our experiences in Alcoholics Anonymous that opinions in many, many instances have a tendency to make sick people sicker. And in some instances to physically kill people. Now those are not my words. Those words were spoken by a former chairman of the General Service Trust, the chairman of the General Service Board of Alcoholics Anonymous, Dr. Jack Norris, or John, and a wonderful man, a man who came aboard AA in the early 50s and on the board as a non-alcoholic trustee. And he was later to be stay on, and we'll get into that maybe if time will allow. And we'll share AA's experience in the beginning and the reasons for the 12 concepts of world service. And then if those of you who may would like to ask a question after lunch for a brief period, while we can get into that. But what Gay said about the letter, and the letter first came to my attention, and it is framed and it is in the archives, in the visiting room in the archives of our General Service Office. And the letter was written to our co-founder, Bill, on December the 30th, 1946. And it is my hope that the conference, if it feels in its heart, to have that reprinted and given and as a service piece. Now, there's a difference between a service piece and advisory action. A service piece is like the guidelines, the yellow guidelines that we have for various and sundry court referral programs, AAWS, the Grapevine, and et cetera, and et cetera. And our cooperation with those in the armed services and cooperation with Al-Anon. And the blue card that the conference voted on, and they voted very wisely as a service piece rather than an advisory action, because this still allows tradition four in the group to go to its full extreme. In other words, the autonomy of the group, as long as it, and these are the words you never hear a lot of times when you get into one of these violent arguments at assemblies or in groups or wherever it is, except in matters affecting other groups or AA as a whole. And so this letter was written, and also to be given free to every member of Alcoholics Anonymous, and for the alcoholic to come. The letter was written to Bill, as I said, on December the 30th, 1946. The letter was written by a non-alcoholic who loved AA more than life itself. A non-alcoholic whose family name is perhaps the most famous family name that the world has ever known up to now, in regards to banking, energy, finance, real estate, grants, you name it. And if it hadn't been for that particular non-alcoholic and his non-alcoholic friends, there are some of us who truly and absolutely believe that our big book never would have been written, because it's from our big book that we got our name up until the time the book came out. It was a nameless, anonymous bunch of drunks. And if it hadn't been for he and his friend, that book, and also that Dr. Bob and Bill would not have gone on with the work. Because it was this particular gentleman and his non-alcoholic friends made sure that Dr. Bob would have some money to go ahead and do the work that was desperately needed in Akron, and also Bill. And so in order to, and they didn't have any money in those days, and so Bill, out of his generosity, donated his royalty payments of the book, which was 10%. In those days, they sold the big book to the groups for $2.50, and the groups in turn sold it to the members for $3.50, allowing to make themselves a dollar profit. But the royalty was paid on the selling price of the book. It's still today on the selling price of the book, that is, on the regular selling price of the book before discount. And so then they said to Bill, well, what are you going to do to eat? Lois was working in a department store, and so they worked out an agreement to where they would give Bill the equivalent amount of money that was going to Dr. Bob, roughly about $25 a week. And then the royalty was to last for Bill and, for Dr. Bob and Ann Smith as long as they were alive. And so that when both of them passed away, and Ann died before Dr. Bob, and when Dr. Bob, no provision was made in their wills to pass on the royalty money to any of their heirs. And that's the reason why their heirs do not receive royalty money. And so then it was renegotiated, a contract with Bill, and later on, and that's getting into something else, and but it does have to do something with the concepts. And so the letter, as I said, and the letter was written to Bill thanking him for a wartime World War II printing of the Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. Due to the paper shortage in World War II, the War Production Board, they cut the size of the book down. The physical side, never dropped out anything. And incidentally, Alcoholics Anonymous is the only publisher of a book that the War Production Board sat down with them and worked out that so that nothing would be cut out, because they felt, as many have come to feel, that this is one of the most potent books that's ever been written, because it has to do with living, and it has to do with dying, and it has to do with the recovery, not only for the alcoholic, but also for the blood kin and emotionally attached, and also for all those who we rub shoulders with and arms with and we come contact with in this world of reality, other than in Alcoholics Anonymous. And the letter thanking Bill for the book and for the inscription on the flyleaf, but this is a part of the letter that I would like to see this be given to every member of a quote to Bill. It must be of great satisfaction for you to realize that the helping hand that you extended to a needy brother many years ago has resulted in the widespread extension of that brotherly act. The regenerating power of the spirit of that helping hand has been the means by which countless lives have been saved that otherwise would have been wrecked. May God continue to bless you and use you ever increasingly as his chosen instrument in the rebuilding of broken lives. Every one of us in Alcoholics Anonymous right this very second, all over the world, we are here as a result of that extension, of that friendly hand from Bill to Dr. Bob. And more important, those of you who are here who are interested in and are active in service, whether it be on what level of the group, whether it be the group secretary, the group treasurer, the group chairman, the GSR in particular, and in turn their DCMs, and in turn their area assembly and its officers and its delegates. And it squeezes it down to the General Service Conference. That is our responsibility, to see that this goes on and on and on and on and on as long as God wants us to have it. And so if there is a desire, if there's a hope, if there is a prayer that I have for each and every one of you, may we continue to let God bless us and use us ever increasingly as his chosen instrument in the rebuilding of broken lives. And how will he do this? And that is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. And that was Gay, I assume, that she was referring to. My role today will be on AA's experience in the 12 concepts of world service and this alcoholic's experience in the 12 concepts of world service. Now, in 1984, a conference brought to the attention, the delegates did, to the attention, to the General Service Conference as a whole, and particular to the General Service Board and its two operating affiliates, AAWS Incorporated and the AA Grapevine Incorporated, that the writings in the concepts, not the concepts themselves, but the writings in the concepts had been changed. Now, that is a conference-approved piece. It was approved in the conference in 1962, the 12 Concepts of World Service. And incidentally, it is the only piece of writing in AA that the author's name is on the front of it, Bill W. It's the only one that you will see. And as a result, no one knew the reasons why they were changed. It never was brought before the conference literature committee, and it never was brought before the trustees literature committee. It was just changed. Now, the responsibility of the service manual is of a committee composed of delegates, which is a conference delegate committee, called the report and charter. Now, the report and charter, and also another committee, policy and admissions, are the only two conference delegates committees that do not have a corresponding trustees committee. And one of the Class A trustees, and Bo happened to be at that particular assembly in last March in Oklahoma City was very upset because he said the delegates won't let the trustees operate. And they have two committees that they don't have a trustees corresponding committee, and it was my responsibility to speak up and say to this gentleman that the reason that they don't is Bill purposely set it up, and also Bernard Smith set this thing up so that they are the watchdogs of the General Service Conference as the watchdogs of Alcoholics Anonymous and our advisory actions, and that is the report and charter that goes into the conference report and also into the directory and the policy and admissions, but the responsibility of it. And so in 19, when they did this, then our chairman of the General Service Board at that time, that was Gordon Patrick, appointed an ad hoc committee. And it seems as though that when I happened to be a member of the General Service Board, that every time I turned around, they'd put me on an ad hoc committee. And to this day, I don't know what ad hoc stands for. All I know is that it is either to create more confusion sometimes. And so, now we were on there, and we got to looking into it. And so where do you want to go if you've, you know, if you're active in AA and you sponsor a lot and service, over the period of time, you're going to develop a lot of spies. And so I happen to be in the General Service in the archives, and I'm looking through all these old concepts. And lo and behold, I found a concept that had been redlined, cut out, added to, taken away from. And this is where they had done, and on one particular thing, and this is what brought us to our attention, the fact that Janet Graves, God bless her, is passed on. And Janet used to do all the rewriting, and she used to do all the editing for AAWS under contract, and later on some for the Grapevine. And Janet wrote a little note. She says, "I don't believe that we need to change this, because this is Bill, and when this happens, the troops will get really upset." And so we went in, and it wasn't a witch hunt. It wasn't designed like one of the government investigating agencies that we have. No, it was to get it back on track. And so the General Service Board of Trustees in on the July board meeting, July the 30th, 1984, voted to amend the bylaws of the General Service Board to include not only the responsibility the General Service Board has in its bylaws about our 12 steps and our 12 traditions, but also to include in the bylaws and insert the short form of the 12 concepts of world service. Now, the reason the long form of the traditions were not incorporated into the bylaws of the General Service Board, it would have made it too long and unwieldy. And so the short form that we are all familiar with, most of us, was the one that was put into the bylaws. And so we decided to do the same with the concepts. And then at the General Service Conference in April of 1985, the conference voted to accept the amendment of the bylaws to add the short form of the 12 concepts, which is in the current service manuals today in the bylaws. And it worked out well, and there's a reason for it. Because Bill, in the introduction to the concepts, says that if there's any amendment or any additions to the conference, to the concepts, that they be placed in the back of the concept, so the fellowship can see from whence we have come. Now, one of the biggest confusions, and God bless it, it isn't because of ego sometimes, It's just the fact that they are uninformed. A lot of times they'll be discussing the writings of the concepts. Well, they're not doing this. If you'll go to a regional forum, or if you go to an area assembly meeting, or if you go to district meetings and the concepts come up, well, this board isn't doing this, this committee isn't doing that, it's a violation of the concepts. Well, let's go ahead and see where they have been changed over a period of time so the fellowship can see from whence we came. Now, I'll use one particular experience. Number one, the labor laws in the United States have changed. And back when the concepts were written and adopted in 1962, you very, very seldom, if any, heard about job discrimination as far as sex was concerned. Today, you can't do that. And so AAWS, who is the employer of the help in the General Service Office, not the Grapevine. The Grapevine is not a member, is not a part of the General Service Office. It is a part of the General Service Headquarters. It has its own articles of incorporation and its own responsibility. And being that AAWS is the employer, it has the 75 number for the Internal Revenue Service for reporting withholding and Social Security to its employees. So therefore, in the hiring now and the employment of employees, AAWS has to live by the laws of the land. Now, back when the concepts were written, the laws of the land as far as employment were not the same as they are today. There also have been some changes on retirement and pension and other things that have to be done. And so as a result, this is what Bill was talking about, so that we can see the fellowship where it has been come from. Well, what happened, the writing and the concepts were changed, and the fellowship then were reading some things that were in the concepts that were not there when they were first written. And if there's anything that throws a bunch of drunks off, and particularly those of us who get into service a lot of times and we get to pounding that this is the way it has to be, this is the way it has to be, as a result it caused a lot of confusion. And so the conference very carefully delineates those important traditions, customs, relationships, and legal arrangements that weld the General Service Board into a working harmony with its primary committees and with its corporate arms of active service. That is AA World Services Incorporated and AA Grapevine Incorporated. Now, the reason that Bill sat down and wrote the concepts is real simple. Up until the time that Bill put it in writing, very few members of AA knew what was going on as far as the nuts and bolts and the day-to-day operation and as of the General Service Board. But at that time, when he really started writing, it was the old Alcoholic Foundation, which was later renamed the General Service Board of Alcoholics Anonymous. And so as a result, he sat down and wrote a series of articles explaining what was going on in areas that had never had been put in print. Never had been put in print. And a lot of it was beginning to get garbled. Now, right along about that time, I'm going to throw something at you. Right along about that time, they came up on the conference about changing the ratio of decreasing the number of non-alcoholic trustees and increasing the number of alcoholic trustees on the General Service Board. And it got to be so violent in the years prior to 62 that they passed a gag rule, believe it or not, and it could not be brought up, a moratorium, and couldn't be brought up for 5 years. So here comes Bill. Now, you have to remember, Bill's one of us. And one of us I'm looking right now at the greatest collection of sober con artists in Atlanta right now, except in a meeting just like it somewhere in Atlanta. And so Bill said, okay, I'll tell you what. And Bill was the one that was wanting to get the decrease in the Class A trustees and increase of the alcoholic trustees, because Bill, thinking like a lot of us, if you get more of our kind on the board, they will go along with what Bill wants to do. And so this is what. So he said, okay, I will take the pressure off if you will go ahead and adopt the concepts. So that was the trade-off that was made, and it was in 1962. Now, ideas like the following pervade the concepts. No group or individual should be set in unqualified authority over another. That guarantees basically our freedom. Large, active, and dissimilar operations should be separately incorporated and managed, each with its own staff, equipment, and working capital. That is done, and Bill set that up so that no entity in AA, other than the General Service Board, which is holds in trust for us, our monies, our reserve fund, our book, our traditions, our steps, and now our concepts of world service, that no entity can become more powerful than the other. More powerful than the other. And at each level of service, authority should be equal to responsibility. Now, I'll tell you, sometimes authority can exceed responsibility, but the sad thing in AA is a lot of times responsibility exceeds the authority to do it. Now, the authority that's exceeded in AA that is the most damaging and the most harmful is when we try to exceed the ultimate authority in Alcoholics Anonymous, that's the loving God. You have to remember that tradition, too, pervades all through the concepts, period. All through the concepts. And where does it follow? It follows tradition one, the common welfare. So that regardless of whether it would be on the conference level, whether it be on the area level, whether it be on the district level, whether it be on the group level or the region level, tradition 3, tradition 4 and 5, tradition 7, tradition 6, tradition 8 and 9, and above all, tradition 10, shall pervade all through our fellowship. Now, if any of the traditions are being utilized in AA, all the other traditions before and after have to follow, or in between, or you just can't separate them. It's just like trying to take the 12 steps and only take one without taking the remaining 11. It stands too weak. So therefore, if it assumes that if one has taken the 12 step, they have taken the previous 11 steps. And the same as it is with the traditions and the reasons for the traditions. And double-headed executive direction should be avoided. In other words, not wearing two hats at once. It's impossible for an alcoholic to wear two hats at the same time. Real simple, we ain't got one head. So in other words, not to be all things, one person, all things for everybody. And that these and other similar provisions define the working relations that can be friendly, yet efficient. Thus they restrain our tendency to concentrate money and power, and this all nearly always being the underlying, though not always the real reason for some of our extreme problems that we have in Alcoholics Anonymous today is money and power. the motivations of our recurrent passion for the consolidation of world service entities. And you'll hear it every now and then. They want to conserve the grapevine with the AAWS. Well, I'll tell you, in order to do that, if you're going to conserve the grapevine, and let me explain something about the laws of the land. Now, I'm speaking from experience. In order to do that, they were going to combine it, if they thought to combine it with AAWS. The first of all, AAWS is not legally incorporated or chartered to do what the grapevine does. The grapevine is not legally incorporated and chartered to do what AAWS does. So therefore, they would have to form a new corporation, meaning that whoever took over the grapevine not only had to assume the assets, but also the liabilities. And I don't know how many of y'all have been active in service. The liabilities of the grapevine financially have been far more greater than the assets over many, many, many years. Now, it also states in the general bylaws of the General Service Board that the General Service Board will refrain from forming a new corporation unless it is a unanimity vote by the conference, which means that that's the thing that a lot of members don't seem to understand. They say, well, why can't the grapevine and they mail out this and they do this all together with AAWS? Well, once again, it goes back to the laws of the land. And you say, well, what is this? This is Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, God runs it. I got news for you. God and the United States government. And the United States government will leave us alone as long as we let God do it in the manner in which AA has been set up. And that is to comply with the laws of the land. Just because many of us sit in here, and many members of AA, we've come in and we've been flushed with this spiritual enema, does not mean that we don't pay income tax. Or if we are employers, not pay the Social Security withheld from our employees. No. If anything, it will give us the enthusiasm to do the things that we are really supposed to do and live in this world of reality. And so concept one, final responsibility and ultimate authority for, I'm going to use the short form now of the concepts. For AA World Service should always reside in the collective conscience of our whole fellowship. Now, before I go any further, do you realize that in the service manual and in the concept section, used to be separate, that there are three writing concepts? There is the index, there is the long form, and there is the short form. And so the AA groups today hold the ultimate responsibility for final authority for our world services, those special elements of overall service activity which makes it possible for our society to function as a whole. Many members of AA and many groups in Alcoholics Anonymous and many districts and many areas forget about AA as a whole. And it has to be reminded when the delegates from each voting area comes back and say, hey, we're just a part of the great whole. We go and we express our views and our experiences, our desires, our wishes, and our wants. And together with the listening to what other voting areas present, and then we come up with what we call an action. Now, if it cannot, if it will seriously affect AA, then it is tabled, it is set aside, and they can't get the two-thirds unanimity that is so desperately needed for advisory action. However, if it falls short of the two-thirds, and if the vote seems to be very, very strong, it sends a signal to the General Service Board, who is responsible to see that the advisory actions and the conference and our wishes from the grassroots level all the way up is implemented through AAWS and the grapevine. Because the General Service Board is really not an operating entity in the legal sense of day-to-day operation. And so which makes it possible for our society to function as a whole. Now, Bill didn't decide this. No, Dr. Bob didn't decide this. The trustees didn't decide this. The groups assume that responsibility. At our international convention in St. Louis in 1955. Up until then, because the conference had started in 1951, and it was on experimental basis only for 4 years, not really knowing whether it would work, that it would turn out to be a political disaster. But what Bill was hoping, and also the trustees were hoping, and older members of AA with experience, this would be the true test of the second tradition, the ultimate authority, a loving God, that could pervade through the whole of Alcoholics Anonymous, whether it be legal entity or non-legal entity, or strictly spiritual. And so the groups assumed that responsibility. It was there on that bill on the behalf of Dr. Bob, and of course Dr. Bob had passed away 5 years prior to that. On behalf of Dr. Bob and the trustees and AA's old-time leaders, that the transfer of world service responsibilities to our entire fellowship. This came about as a result of stark necessity, because the fact had to be faced that AA's founders were perishable. Dr. Bob had already passed away. Bill was the only one. The link between us and our trustees and Works Publishing, and then which became AA later on, AA Publishing Company. At one time, AAWS was operating under three names until the Internal Revenue Service decided about the change in the bylaws, and now it's known as AAWS Incorporated. Because as a result, and thus, who would be the link to suggest and advise the trustees on the gap that had to be filled? And so they wisely came up as the link that would advise the trustees, and also in turn so they could implement what this advice was. That's the reason it's called advisory action. It simply advises. That's all. And as long as, and we'll get into something else in a few minutes. And so AA as a whole, well, you know, a little group over here in Little Rabbit, Australia, it can't advise it. So it comes through a process of the assemblies, and it in turn squeezes down to the General Service Conference and through the delegates. And as a result, this is the way that the link, and so we are the link now, and since Bill has also gone on, as we all well know. Now, there were other reasons for this basic shift of ultimate responsibility and authority to AA as a whole. Because up until the time of the General Service Conference, the members of AA just said, Bill, you and Bob take care of it.
you and Bob take care of it. And the members of AA knew Bill. He would travel, and Dr. Bob in his limited way before he passed away. And Bill, they'd invite Bill to come, you know, and bring Lois and et cetera and et cetera, and Bill would sit around. But no one knew who the trustees were. No one did it because they were self-serving, and they were also nepotism, which is, means that they were electing each other, and they were electing their successors. And all these reasons revolve around tradition too. For our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God that may express himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. Right after AA got started, and Bill would send a little letter, he and Ruthie Hawk, out to those groups that they were known in existence, telling them certain things. The drunks wrote back to Bill, said, Bill, we'll do anything you want us to do, but do not give us a government. So tradition too, like all the AA traditions, is the voice of experience, based on the trials of thousands of groups. And so the main principles of tradition too are inevitable. The AA groups are to be, and are still today, the final authority. And our leaders are but entrusted with delegated responsibilities only. This is the reason why in the Southeast region, as in every region in AA, the groups in turn, along with the DCMs or whatever voting procedure that each has, that each area has its autonomy, they just simply entrust delegated responsibility to the delegate. Now, if you let your delegate come back and run your area committee, you have not given him, you have exceeded the responsibility. You have exceeded the authority. Why have an area assembly and an area committee if the delegates, let's say, comes back and runs the whole show? You don't need it. So this is what we're talking about, delegated responsibility and delegated authority. And they're entrusted to delegated responsibilities only. Whether it be the secretary of a group, whether it be the treasurer of a group, all the principles of the concept work just as well on the group level, except in incorporation matters, that is, there's anything that we have in Alcoholics Anonymous. We have to keep in mind our uppermost consciousness that what? Our fellowship is not a business operation. It's a spiritualized society. Now, when groups get into, start having bank accounts, and usually the reason, although it's more of an excuse, that they're piling up this money for a building fund, and so it's beginning to draw interest. And well, when it draws interest, then you have to have a tax number. Right there and then, you're going from a strictly a pure spiritual entity to a business entity. Right there and then. We have to remember that ours is a highly spiritualized society, characterized by enough enlightenment, enough responsibility, and enough love of man to ensure that our democracy of world service will work under any and all conditions. If it didn't work under any and all conditions, this is where the drunks would eat it up alive. That is the precise reason that we can rely on tradition too, our group conscience, and its trusted servants. Happily for us, there seems little prospect of a spiritual calamity in AA. Where would we go if that would happen? AA is designed. I don't know how many of you read the Book of Alcoholics Anonymous.
but you will find it in chapter 7, working with others, that every man, because you have to remember in those days, women, when the book came out, there was no women, they were sober, members of AA, or when it was written, that each man has to find God from within. That's the freedom. A lot think that come to AA today that we're just unfortunately in AA today in some areas, not all. It's gone to just a not drinking society instead of being a living sober society. And there is a big difference. And so the life of each individual and of each group is built around our 12 steps and our 12 traditions. We very well know the penalty for extensive disobedience to these principles, which means it would be death for the individual and dissolution for the AA group. An even greater force for AA's unity is the compelling love that we have for our fellow members and for the principles upon which our lives today are founded. Sure, we talk and we gossip about each other. This is true. But it's done with love and it's done with understanding. There's no society in the world like ours. We're free to come. We're free to go. We're free to talk about each other. We're free to lie to each other. Yeah, nobody locks us up. Don't have to. In AA, we got two authorities. A loving God as we understand him, and alcohol as we understand him, and one heals and one kills. And so we don't need any human being grabbing the handles of power. Concept 2. The General Service Conference of Alcoholics Anonymous has become, for nearly every practical purpose, the active voice and the effective conscience of our whole society in its world affairs. Now, you notice now the General Service Conference now, not just local, but now this concept puts it right where it belongs, in our world affairs. Now, since the ultimate responsibility and authority for AA World Service belongs to the AA groups, it is rather obvious that the 70, 80, we really don't know how many AA groups that we've got. There are roughly around about between 35 and 40, listen to thousands, supposedly AA groups in the world that we know they're out there, but they're not registered or they are not in basic communication. They feed off of each other. And we've got around about over 2 million AA members scattered all over the world. We don't know how many members we've got. We're not in the member counting business. All we're interested in, are we sober? Now, the reason that to head count in AA is this morning when the sun comes up all over the world, God knows how many sober members of Alcoholics Anonymous will be alive. But when the sun goes down all over the world this day, many who woke up this morning as members of AA won't be members of AA. They've gone back to drinking. So we really don't know. We can only roughly estimate. Because the groups and the members all over the world cannot of ourselves actually manage and conduct our world services. Sure, the group conscience and the needed monies are out there, and the power of the groups and members to change our world service structure.
and to criticize its operation is virtually supreme. And don't kid yourself, we do criticize it, don't we? For the groups and the members have all the final responsibility and authority that there is. Because, you see, Alcoholics Anonymous belongs to us members. It doesn't belong to, believe it or not, the non-alcoholic trustees. Belongs to us. They work for us. They're there to serve us. But it belongs to the members of AA. Period. And to nobody else. And as a result, you know, we have all the final responsibility if we will just exercise it in the manner in which it's given to us. But the problem that exists in a lot of districts and a lot of areas and a lot of assemblies is that the members are not willing to give that responsibility and authority because either they're afraid or either they're scared or mostly because they are uninformed. So, sometimes the area committee has to take the bull by the horns. Sometimes the delegates have to take the bull by. Sometimes the General Service Board and AAWS and the Grapevine have to take the ball. You'd be surprised. I've been a voting member of 6 General Service Conferences, and I always got on what I call the nuts and bolts of Alcoholics Anonymous, the conference, trustees conference committee. And you'd be surprised. We try to set what to be discussed at the workshops and the agendas, and we would send letters out to the delegates right after the previous General Service Conference was over with, and if we got 6 letters back suggesting what to put on the conference agenda, it would be a success. I've seen it where we've only had 2 or 3. And it's not the delegates' fault. No. No. And so to determine that, and then all of a sudden the people say, well, who put that on there? Well, look, let me tell you something. It operates just like in a group. In AA, if you ask to do something and you turn it down, don't gripe at the ones that are doing it. That's how simple the whole thing is. That's all. Somebody, the work has to go on. And yeah, a lot of times, and you call a meeting, and maybe 2 or 3 will show up, or maybe 100. Doesn't make a bit of difference. And so in order to avoid confusion and to function in simplicity and service, the groups have delegated complete administrative and operational authority to their conference, and the conference in turn does the same thing to the General Service Board, who in turn does it to its 2 affiliates. But it starts right back with us. Sitting in this room is the true power of Alcoholics Anonymous. It's not up yonder. It's here. And folks, it's just like a computer. You get back just what you put in it. You put in garbage, you get back garbage. You put in principles, you'll get back principles. As Bill and Dr. Bob early in AA had found it necessary to delegate a large part of their active authority to the trustees. You see, back in the early days, this is the way delegated authority started. Bill was delegated the responsibility by Dr. Bob to basically write our big book. Dr. Bob also delegated to Bill the responsibility and the authority to sit down and write the 12 steps, our 12 traditions. Because Dr. Bob was the master 12-stepper at Alcoholics. He 12-stepped over 5,000 alcoholics before he died, personally. And he said, Bill, you like to do the writing, you do it. And so, and that was done in trust, and it was done in love. And so, in turn, this is where delegated responsibility and authority first starting in AA. The same powers as a result of the conference charter, the General Service Conference of Alcoholics Anonymous, plus any later form sections, has become, for nearly every practical purpose, the active voice and effective conscience of our whole society in its world affairs. And it is a responsibility. You ask any of your former delegates, you ask your current delegate, you ask your current alternate delegates, and those have been alternate delegates, and they've seen the correspondence. The reason that it is an awesome responsibility is because it has to do with our being, our actual lives, ourselves. It doesn't have to do so much with money. Oh, it does a little bit. But you don't have to have money to stay sober in AA. No. But you have to have a way to live. You have to have the assurance. You have to have the principles that are unshakable. And the reasons for this vesting of responsibility is the result of finding out that an ultimate authority and responsibility lies in the AA groups for world services. If that was all that there is to it, it never would amount to anything. Nothing could be accomplished on that basis alone. So in order to get effective action, the groups in turn must delegate the actual operational authority to chosen service representative. Here it comes. The group delegates it to its general service representative. If any of you belong to a group and you don't have a general service representative or a GSR, who are you delegating the responsibility to? Ego and selfishness and self-centeredness is the most destructive force in Alcoholics Anonymous, because it leads to stinking thinking. Stinking thinking leads in many instances to stinking drinking. Now, if some of you ain't heard that, that's old-timey AA, baby. That's the kind of AA that brung us to where we are right now. And so, therefore, that is the operational authority, yeah, to their chosen representative, are fully empowered to speak for them and act for them. The group conscience of AA could not be heard unless a properly chosen conference was fully informed and fully trusted to speak for its respecting most matters of world service. Hence the principle of amply delegated authority and responsibility to trusted service must be implicit from the top to the bottom of the active service structure. So in other words, it just amounts to responsibility and authority. But folks, in order to exercise responsibility, each of us and collectively must become responsible. We must become responsible. This is a clear indication or implication of AA's tradition too, that in other words, the ultimate authority works all the way through. Everybody, the system is very, very simple. Here it is. You've been delegated to carry the message, and we expect you to do it, and that's it, and go from there. Concept 3, to ensure effective leadership, we should endow each element of AA, the conference, the General Service Board, and its service corporations, staffs, committees, and executives, with a traditional right of decision. I wonder if you heard something. It says, to ensure effective leadership, we should endow each element of AA.
That is the AA group. That is the AA individual member of AA to begin with. The AA group, because the individual member is a vital element in AA. And I'm going to go again with the district and the area and the region. In addition to the conference, General Service Board and its active arms, with a traditional right of decision. Because I'll tell you, here again is a working example of tradition too. Our leaders are but trusted servants, they do not govern. We ought to trust our world servants, for within the framework of their general service responsibilities, whether they be defined by charter, resolution, advisory action, or custom. It should be the traditional right of all World Service Boards, committees, and executives, and to decide which problems that will dispose of themselves and upon which matters they will report, consult, or ask specific directions. Now, this works very, very well in an AA group. If you've got a group treasurer, or you've got, in other words, you've got your group trusted servants, they have to have the freedom and the responsibility and the authority to decide which problems they will dispose of themselves and upon which matters they will report, consult, or come back to the group and say, let's have a group conscience meeting and ask specific directions. Because if we don't trust each other and our world servants, then no effective leadership can be possible. Can be possible. Now, it may sound a little bit, you know, out of whack, but us drunks, we're out of whack to start with. And, you know, sometimes the treasurer said, go out and buy some coffee. Well, for years in the group, they've been using Maxwell House coffee. But he can go down to Kmart and he can get Mr. Sam's brand for about $1.50 cheaper. And so he goes down and he buys it. They said, buy coffee. And he comes back and they're making coffee. And there up on the corner on the shelf is Mr. Sam's coffee. Just as sure as I'm standing here drunk, so go about. How come we're not drinking Maxwell House coffee? Where did we get that coffee? We didn't vote to change Maxwell House. Who did it? I did it. Who gave you the authority to do it? You ain't lived until one of the most violent arguments in the group is to move the smoke arrestor from this wall to that wall. And move the non-smokers from that wall over here to the smoking wall. Yeah. In AA, you have to remember, we're not interested in whether they're going to have World War VIII, whether they're going to drop an atomic bomb, whether terrorists are going to blow this building up right now. We got more important things to talk about. Who's going with who? Whose checks bounce, you know? Serious business, you know. Serious business. And now, you know, here again is very true. Because we ought to trust our world servants. And within the framework of their general responsibilities, no matter how they are defined, and upon which matters they will report, and which matters they will discuss, and which matters they'll come back and ask direction. So as a result of concept 1 and 2, fortified and powered by tradition 2, the General Service Conference and the General Service Board charters simply define the responsibilities of the conference to act on behalf of AA as a whole. These charters just simply, in a general way, describe the relation between the groups, the conference, and the trustees, and our active service entities. Without these definitions and description, we could not function. Now, this concept, just simply puts tradition 2 into action by allowing us to trust our responsible leaders to decide within the understood framework of their duties how they will interpret and apply their own authority and responsibility to each particular problem or situation as it arises.
there will always be plenty of ultimate authority to correct inefficiency, ineffectiveness, or abuse. Now, if the conference doesn't function well, the groups can send better delegates. If the area assembly doesn't function well, they can elect new area officers. If the delegate doesn't function well, they can get another delegate. If the trustees get out of line, the conference can censor, criticize them, even reorganize them. If our headquarters services go haywire, the trustees can elect better directors and hire better help. Still, with this situation that we have, many areas are sometimes tempted, and some do, to instruct their delegates exactly how to vote upon certain matters in the conference. Now, because the groups do hold the ultimate responsibility and the responsibility for our service, there is no doubt that an AA group has the right to do this. If they insist, they can give directives to their delegates on any and all AA matters. But were the groups to carry these instructions to delegates to extremes, then they would be proceeding on the false theory that they are running Alcoholics Anonymous. That the group opinion, in other words, is more knowledgeable on world service matters, and it would be far superior to conference opinion. That's the first reason why each group or each area, whatever it thinks its delegates need to do or not do, then it meets with others, and then the ultimate authority begins to kick back in this conversation and discussion and presentations and workshops and etc. Practically speaking, this could never be the case. There would be very few questions, indeed, that instructed delegates could better settle than a conference. Acting on the spot with full facts and debate is always desirable. So is full consulting with committee members and general service representatives. The instructed delegate who cannot act on his own conscience in a final conference vote is not a trusted servant. He's just a messenger. That's all. Just a messenger. And so now this brings us now to concept 4. At all responsible levels, we ought to maintain a tradition right of participation, allowing a voting representation in reasonable proportion to the responsibility that each must discharge. I wonder how many of you read the service manual that in normal society, normal organizations, concept 4 is concept 3, and concept 3 is concept 4. You see, they're written backwards. They're written backwards. You know why? It's real simple. In normal society, they meet together, they participate, and then make a decision. But in AA, if you ain't capable of making a decision, you can't participate. It's real simple. Until I made a decision to get sober, I couldn't participate as a member of AA, could I? Now, you get the message? Yeah. That's how simple it is. If you can't make a decision, how can you participate? So if you send in a delegate that's instructed, period, you got to do this or else, he's not participating. He's just there. That's all. And so the principle of participation has been carefully built into our conference structure. The conference charter specifically provides that the trustees and the directors of our service corporation, together with their respective executive staffs, shall always be voting members of the General Service Conference. Now, every time we get onto this, there's always one or two or maybe a dozen or more that say, well, why should the directors, if it's the conference belongs to the members of AA, why should the directors of the corporation, why should the paid staff, why should even the trustee always be a voting member of the General Service Conference itself? Well, this principle of participation also applies to the directors of General Service Board's wholly owned active service corporations, as well as those who are appointed to the board's standing committee. Now, this was Bill's thinking, and I can understand the reason. One of the best reasons for participation certainly has to do with our spiritual needs. All of us deeply desire to belong. We need and want an AA relation of brotherly partnership. The paramount ideal of our spiritual corporation should never include any members who is regarded as second class. Thank God in Alcoholics Anonymous, we don't have any second class members. We're all the same. Even though sometimes we feel that we're far superior or less superior to someone next to us in AA or in AA. But no, we're all the same. When we get to AA and we cease, and the agent that forces us to come, and we get physically comfortable from the agent that forces us to come to AA, deep down inside, we're a society of equals. We're all spiritually ill. There are no well folks in Alcoholics Anonymous. And as a result, the paramount ideal of spiritual government should never include, and let's please, if we can remember that, we have no people who are regarded as second class. This, if we are to have, therefore we have no second class AAs, then neither should there be any second class or second class world service workers. Thus, it encourages every one of us who serve AA to accept the necessary guidelines that our usual responsibilities require. This we can do when each and every one of us is sure that we belong. For the principle of participation assures us that we are truly the trusted servants, as tradition too suggests that we are. Our comfort zone in AA increases when we finally realize, yes, I'm a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. I have the full freedom to participate as a member of AA. And the comfort zone begins to get better. The preservation of the principle of participation in our service structure is, to those who already understand its application and benefits, a matter of highest importance to our future. Because our experience and bitter experience has shown us that some of each of new generation of delegates and trustees will invariably try to weaken, modify, or toss out the principles of corporate participation. That is where the trustees vote and the directors vote. In other words, non-delegates vote at the conference that are eligible. Every year, a few delegates will question the right of the corporate directors, staffs, and even trustees to vote in conference. Sometimes new volunteer corporate directors will ask why any paid staff member should also be a director and therefore have a vote as good as their own. So it is vitally important that we preserve the traditional right of participation in the face of every tendency to whittle it down. What time are we going to eat? Well, I've got time for one more. Okay. Concept 5. Throughout our structure is a traditional right of appeal ought to prevail, so that minority opinion will be heard and personal grievances receive careful consideration. Now, I'll tell you, this concept encourages all minorities. Now, we're not talking about black, and we're not talking about white, and we're not talking about Hispanic, and we're not talking about Asiatic. We're talking about that one that gets up and feels that they're uncomfortable as a result of what's going on. The saddest member in an AA group is the one who knows deep down within themselves, or feel that they know, that the spirit of the traditions are being violated in the group. But they are hesitant and sometimes powered by fear to get up and say, I need to talk to the group just a few moments tonight about that. For afraid they'll be criticized, afraid they'll be asked to leave the group, afraid the ones that they are sponsoring will quit them. And who's hurting the most? Minority ideas in AA get very thoughtful attention, or they should, I'll tell you. This concept encourages all minorities, whether in our staffs, committees, or corporate boards, or among the trustees or the delegates, the freedom to file a minority report. This operates not only in the group level, the district level, the area level, the region level, the conference level, as a whole. A majority, and whenever they feel a majority to be in considerable error, particularly is this true when a minority considers an issue to be such a grave one that a mistaken decision could seriously alter AA or affect AA as a whole. It would then charge itself with the actual duty of presenting a minority report to the conference. I've seen at the General Service Conference an advisory action passed on Thursday. After a very heated one, that didn't start that particular conference year, it started two conference years prior to that, passed on Thursday. Friday morning, when the conference opened, there in the center bank of the microphone stood a delegate, and he was asked, "What is it?" He says, "I'm very deeply disturbed. I didn't sleep last night. I walked the streets of New York. I've been concerned about the advisory action of this nature," and he spells it out of what they passed the day before. And while he's talking, you look over at the bank of microphones on the right wall, the left one, all of a sudden you see delegates getting up. And the one gets up, following him, says, "I thought I was the only one that didn't sleep last night. I'm too disturbed about it. Over here, I'm too disturbed about it." Then it starts to mushroom. And finally somebody calls for a motion to rescind the advisory action that was done the day before. Then it's called for a second. Then they call for discussion. And you'd be surprised. And what happens? And I sat there myself, and I didn't vote the way that delegate did. And I said, wait a minute. That's a viewpoint I didn't hear. Wait a minute. That delegate is right. And I would be derelict if I would allow something to go on that he could see in the heat of the struggle, and sometimes just get it over with. You know, let's go on to something else. And they call for discussion, very little discussion. They call for a vote, and almost, they didn't even need two-thirds. It was almost 100%. What was passed the day before was unpassed the next day as a result of someone getting up after clear thinking and just laying it out very, very simple. Just to show you, when there used to be district committee man, and right when the liberation movement started among the ladies, and they got up and they said, "I'm not in my area, they're great, they're not district committee men, they're district committee women." And they got to arguing, and they got to fighting, and they got to fussing. And just to show you, and here comes a delegate And believe it or not, that day on, he had on his dashboard overalls. I don't know whether y'all know what that is or not. The only thing missing was his nail apron. And he walks up to the microphone, and he looked like he's just an old country boy that never got out of second class. Great. He said, well, he said, you know, they're arguing about whether it be a district committee man, district committee woman. Why don't we just call it a district committee member, and then we don't have to change the initials DCM? And he sat down. And somebody said, where did that brilliant so-and-so come from? Particularly one with a three-piece suit on, you know. Yeah. Yeah, this is how it, that's the fun of it. That's the fun of it. And so, this concept permits any person in our service structure, whether paid or unpaid, to petition for the redress of a personal grievance carrying his or her complaint, if he or she so desire, directly to the General Service Board, and he or she should be able to do this without prejudice or fear or reprisal. In Alcoholics Anonymous, individual freedom is of enormous importance. Thus, this concept aims at the total problem of protecting and making the best possible use of minority feelings and opinions. We cannot take away the right of any alcoholic to belong to AA or to leave AA. Neither can we force any members to believe anything, pay anything, or do anything. This concept allows the freedom to never be subjected to the tyranny of either the majority or the minority. And sometimes a majority can be more haranguing than the minority, provided we carefully define their relations between them. And thus we can walk in the path of world service in the spirit of the 12 steps and the spirit of our 12 traditions. Well, let's go ahead and take a break now, and we'll have lunch. Thank you very, very much.